Excuse me, I just need to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I would like to introduce your host. We have Ms. Glenda St. Jerry. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Laurie. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On the call today for the PPSC Working Group, we have J. Scott Evans, Yona Cernan, Avery Doria, Cheryl Langdonor, and we have apologies from Ilya Baslikov. For staff, we have Liz Gaster, Marika Koenigs, and Glenda St. Jerry, myself. Thank you, J. Scott. Over to you.
All right. Let's start with Section 2.1.41, which I believe has to do with introductions. Now, I didn't see, I may have missed it, anything from Sabai on this. I did see something from Avery regarding this particular point and the comments that were made. So, Avery, I'm going to let you briefly state for the group your thoughts, just in case they haven't been reviewed since they went out this morning.
And I apologize that some of them went out just at the last minute. I noticed that they hadn't gone to the list and then realized that I had sent them to the wrong address again, so had to bundle them off. I think the issue that I was taking up was that it should be possible to do closed groups because of secrecy, because of security, et cetera. And I think my first thought on that is that the GNSO shouldn't be doing anything in a non-transparent, non-open matter. However, you know, to be so absolute as that is obviously somewhat irrational. And there may be occasions that I can't envision where it does become justified. So if there's a notion of closing something, that seems to be something that has to be sort of a supermajority decision of the chartering body and not just something that a group would decide on. Now, if we decide to take that kind of solution, we probably have to connect with either the PDP, although I can't imagine there being something in a PDP that remains non-transparent, or in the council proceedings as yet another reason why a supermajority vote might be recorded, might be required for something. So, in other words, I mean, I sort of contradict myself. My gut instinct is never, never, never. But, of course, I realize that isn't completely rational.
Well, if I may pose to the group, could we not just say members of the working group should be informed that all GNSO working groups are normally expected to operate? Meaning there could, that just leaves, by putting in that qualifier, that means the norm is to operate under the principles of transparency, but there could be exceptions to that norm.
And this is Aubrey again, and basically just leave it open as to how breaking that norm would happen to some other document.
Well, I don't think that's for us to do.
I'm fine with doing that, but I'm fine.
So this is Yonna. I'm kind of like, I think I, in the last minute, actually posted something here as well, and I had a little bit stronger opinion than Avery. I don't see really any reason why any working group should be closed. And if it should be closed, it most probably shouldn't be a GNSO working group. But on the other hand, I think I do kind of support what J. Scott proposed and just leave it open. And if there is this unlikely event that something should be closed, then most probably there should be a policy amendment done at that point to allow that.
And not to leave it open,
and not to kind of like give the rules now how to do that.
Well, you know, I think that the qualifier GNSO may be inappropriate here because we've tried to not narrow it to just GNSO working groups. So perhaps that's where we need to take it out. Take out GNSO. Should be informed that all working groups are normally expected to operate.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying, Cheryl?
Yes, I like the you know, the all working groups. And even if one is very close, has been tested and proved for whatever reasons of the chartering organisation to need to do a lot of in closed committee or in camera work, there will still be, I would have thought, an awful lot of that would happen, not even as an exception, as Avery was saying, that it would still be operating in as open a manner as possible and would be saying, right, we're doing this, this and this at this meeting, and we're going to be in camera and we'll report to you the outcomes of what's in camera. There would still be an openness that's total closed, just I can't come to terms with absolutely closed, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think that's for us to determine at this level. I think what we're doing is we're just setting out a norm. If, like, the board with the IRT comes forth and they establish something that would be outside the norm, they will do through whatever powers they want to and say that, you know, the openness will be met by giving executive summaries.
Yes.
You know, but so I think we should take GNSO out before working groups, Marika.
Can I make a comment?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to note, I know that, you know, there's a desire that these working group guidelines are, you know, apply to other parts maybe of the IT community as well, but the reality is that this is focused on GNSO working groups. So, you know, I think there's no harm taking it out here. I don't think there's any harm here. And another point I wanted to make is Sabaya did actually submit a comment on this. He did submit it, you know, very early after I actually sent out the email. So, if you don't mind, I'll just, as he,
sure.
I don't think he's on the call yet, I'll just paraphrase, because I think he's, supporting what Avery was saying, that he's basically saying as well that, in principle, there shouldn't be any secret meetings at all, but if there would be a desire or decision, it should be have a very high threshold to decide for a closed meeting or have some parts that are closed. So if others want to, you know, just encourage to read his comment to the mailing list, but just to know that he did provide input on that specific comment, which, if I interpreted right, it's along the lines that Avery was commenting.
Okay. So do we have consensus to remove GNSO and add normally expected?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that was, let me go, trying to follow Marika's excellent emails that she sent out, breaking this into sections. All right. We have 2.2. This is regarding the liaison. Again, we will start with you, Avery.
Okay, sorry, but the number is
2.2 regarding liaisons.
That's one where I was rather strong, wasn't it?
Yes.
And my note there, I know it was extra work for Marika, but thanks for doing it that way. Made it so much easier to respond to. Okay, first of all, the sort of I take this hat on, I put this hat off stuff is really easier said than done. And especially when one occupies a position of power. And while all of us, when we're in those positions of power, can tell you why it really isn't a position of power and it's just service and we never get to do what we want to do, etc., when we hold those positions, we do get to decide what's on agendas, we do get to decide what's put off, etc. We get to frame the discussion in ways no one else in the process really can. So, and, you know, having been in such a position and not been in it at various occasions in my life, there is a real difference. So when you're in this liaison role, which has an integral part to play in the appeals process and in everything else, if you are a champion for something, even if you say, I'm switching hats all the time, it really doesn't work. And so that's sort of why I sort of take the strong position that I do on the need for neutrality in the liaison. That's also, I think I argue in other places, why we have several stakeholder groups members, and so there's always someone else in the stakeholder group or constituency that can participate and can be the champion and can be the whatever. But I really think that now the one place where it's difficult, and this is one of the ones that I had personally played with in the past, is, you know, the MTA who has no one from the same stakeholder group. Now, eventually, and I don't know if they're doing it now, but eventually the MTAs did work together kind of as an ERSAP stakeholder group and shared and helped each other with getting their work done. But, of course, they don't. And so in those cases, there may have been a, you know, state your position once, but don't ever argue it. Don't get into the discussion. Because, as I say, as you start to champion a point, you can't all of a sudden take off your champion hat when that issue becomes the one in the middle of an argument. Say, okay, mm-hmm. I'm neutral now. I was arguing, you know, red-faced against you 3 minutes ago, but now I'm neutral because of the problem. It just doesn't work.
Okay, Marika?
Yeah, first of all, I can maybe channel the bias comment, as I think he saw it on the call. He basically notes that I think we should allow for the dual role possibility, but should have language to say that ideally we shouldn't have such a situation. But if we do have one, the Michael Connor comment 7 should apply. In any case, I think MO comment 7 should be included in some fashion. And on the comment 8, I guess if we can streamline, we should. And if I can make a personal comment to Avery's position, I think, yes, in the ideal world, we would have, you know, more reps from each stakeholder group or constituencies in working groups so that one can fulfill that liaison role. That is not the current reality. We have certain working groups where we have zero representation from certain stakeholder group constituencies. And, you know, if we can get one, that's already, you know, sometimes a real achievement. So
you're exhausted with one.
Yeah, if we can have some certain groups, it's a struggle because they, you know, they have, you know, maybe a few members or they're not interested in the issue. So, you know, personally, I agree that that should be a neutral role. But, yeah, maybe we should accommodate in the current situation where we're in, where we do have, you know, a thin spread community where it's often indeed members that volunteer to be the liaison that have as well a certain interest or at least expertise or knowledge in the issue, you know, to be able to try the switching hats. I agree, in the ideal situation, it should be a person that's completely neutral, has no, you know, opinion or voice in the issue, but it's not really the current reality as it is.
Yonan?
Yeah, sorry, it just took a little while to get out of commute. I kind of like, I am somewhere in the middle with what Avery said and what Marika said. Sometimes there, I think it depends on the working group so much that we should go for the stronger one, and then the working group can, of course, say, well, yeah, this person isn't, should be on kind of like a neutral liaison, but has the right to speak or has the right to voice another opinion because we are three people in this working group, or 10 or 15 or whatever, and not 30, and we don't have enough people to be liaisons. But I don't think that really needs kind of like any language change here. I think that if we start to weaken the liaison position by saying that, well, you have to be, you basically have to be neutral when you are working as the liaison and try to be neutral when you are the liaison, but you can actually advocate your position freely when you're not, I wouldn't like that either. So I would actually keep the text that we have here now. And it says the liaison is expected to play a neutral role. Well, in those cases where there is not enough people, well, that expectation might not happen. But in the cases where there are enough people and there is can be a neutral liaison, so the liaison shouldn't have a kind of like a dual role there. And I think that the kind of like the text that we have here now allows for both cases quite nicely. But puts enough restriction and enough kind of warning that a liaison should at least try to be very, very neutral.
Marika seems to agree with that. Cheryl.
Thank you, J. Scott. I also agree with the keeping of the text, and certainly not diluting the high level intention for neutrality, not independence. Well, it's quite the opposite. Wherever possible, I think we can't stitch this up so tightly that we're not going to have the realities that Avery. I mean, we can try, but it's going to be a smoke and mirrors exercise if we do. The realities that Avery's brought forward are the realities of the type of group dynamics we're going to get in a work group. It's just the nature of it. However, there is a role for the chartering organisation to play here, and I don't think that can be written in, but it's something that perhaps we could look at in some sort of guideline or suggestion in some other way or training document. You know, we've talked about certain guidelines and skill sets being offered to chairs. Perhaps we also need a little thumbnail list for chartering organisations. And in the point of liaisons, for example, where we have dual work groups. So you've got a work group that happens to be a GNSO and at-large advisory committee work group. Avery and I have battled with some of those in the past, and Chuck and I are doing some now as well. Using these guidelines, even in their draft form, ALAC just went through an exercise where we actually have a whole bunch of people coming into a work group. So it's not Marika's sad issue of, you know, hardly getting anyone. But at our meeting last evening, we appointed the liaison, and the liaison was appointed formally to carry out very specific roles on behalf of us as sort of quasi-semi-CO. And that was defined in our instructions and process of selecting that person. So it sort of doesn't need to be enshrined here. You know, that person was very clearly instructed on what their role is going to be in terms of being our voice and being a conduit back to us and having a role in disputes and in resolutions. And I think it's sort of done at that level, and this language gives that set of tools to work with.
Okay. I am hearing a consensus to leave the language as written. And I read a note from Aubrey that says that she isn't requesting that the language be changed to make it more strident. She does not believe that it needs to be changed in a way she believes would dilute it.
This is Subaya here. Could somebody tell me exactly where we are?
We're at 2.2, talking about the liaison definition.
Okay.
Or the role of the liaison as it's laid out at 2.2. I mean, the one thing we could do that would distinguish is go down to 6.1.4, is it? Where we talk about the chartering organization appointing other appointment roles, and we could put in a sentence that says that every effort should be made to ensure that the liaison is, you know, independent or something.
Mm-hmm.
We could put in a sentence there that says, you know, the preferred model with which Aubrey talked to.
Yeah. I actually, you know, my notes said the same thing. I mean, that basically I prefer that it was an independent neutral person, but, and that would be the ideal situation, but maybe sometimes the mitigating circumstances where somebody has to double up.
So what I would suggest is we leave 2.2's liaison as is. We go down to 6.1.4 where we talk about other important roles, and we put in a little section that it's preferred that given the neutrality and the role that the liaison plays in the appeals process, that this be an independent person, but acknowledges the reality, or something to
may
that
I
effect.
May I suggest that
go ahead.
That you could make it strongly preferred and make the point really strongly? Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I think that that's correct. I think it's a strong preference that it would... I mean... The way I envision this in my head, so just let me play out my little Disney drama for you. is a person reading this, I would assume the way that the GNSO, and putting this into the world of the GNSO, how this would operate is a member of the GNSO would be given the responsibility to be the liaison.
Yes.
Because the GNSO is supposed to, quote-unquote, manage the process.
Yep.
And so as a GNSO representative, one of your tasks are that you are now assigned to be the liaison to the XYZ working group.
Cheryl here couldn't agree with your Disney play more. We gave our liaison to this new work group a clear mandate and role. It was enshrined in our minutes, and that person had to be a member of the ALAC.
And so that's how I sort of envision this working. So I think 2.2 seems to be fine, because it's not, all it's doing is telling the working group that there is a liaison and this is their function. It's when you're talking to the audience that's the charting organization
that
you need to give the direction that what the preferred model is. So, Marika, could you craft probably a small, I would even say a separate paragraph that talks about that?
Yeah, bulleted out, yeah.
For 6.2. Is it 6.4.1?
6.1.4. So this is Marika. I was actually thinking, because, I mean, the section already describes, like, you know, the ladies should be neutral amongst
right.
discussion and the roles you have. I was wondering if we can just add at the end of the last sentence something like, so it is therefore preferred that the CEO appoint a person that can fulfill those criteria or that role, something like that, or strongly preferred.
Yeah. Works under the specific mandate of the CEO.
Something. Let's craft some language, and I would like to put strongly preferred to really emphasize that this is central to it.
And this is Subhaya. May I suggest that this point, when it was being made, there were two parts to it, right? One, I mean, through the collective comments. One part was, you know, don't even have somebody, you know, that is related to anything. I'll keep it strictly separate. What we're trying to say is, well, that may not be possible in all cases, but it's strongly preferred. But there was a second point going with it, which was about how if they didn't actually perform in a neutral way, they should be removed or censured or something. There was some language that extended somebody, some commenter wanted to put in. Maybe we can, once we tie both together, the idea is that, hey, you know, it's a strong preference. It's, you know, somebody who's separate. But whatever the case is, that this, especially when it's not somebody who's related who's coming into that position, then this, you know, watch out, because, you know, people could appeal to remove if you're not really doing the job right. That clause that was there in one of the comments.
We you know, we can put in, and I'll put to the group now, do you think it's consensus to state in the liaison, because don't we have a section that talks about roles and this is just defining and sort of saying who they are, but don't we go down further and talk about the appeals process and the fact that if you don't like, isn't that included later?
I think it is, but I think the point here was to point out that, hey, if you're going to have somebody who's supposed to be a neutral position, but you've decided for various reasons that may not be a neutral, you know, then, you know, there's a stronger emphasis on the fact that, you know, you really have to, you know. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way I see it, like your little Disney play, this is not important to me, but I'm just, you know, since we're discussing this, in terms of the Disney view you had of, you know, how it might play out, you know, the way I see it is when somebody's upset, I mean, people are going to read this, people are not going to notice, they're just going to go ahead and do whatever, right? I mean, appoint people and so on and so forth. When some unhappiness stems, somebody's upset, some group is upset, they want to have a piece of paper, a document they can point to and say, look, guys, this is where this says, this is what the strong preference was, this is where it's not happening, and then use that as a means to achieve change, right? I mean, that's about the time I think this paper would really come into force, right? Going ahead, I can't see in the future somebody who's putting together a working group really read everything carefully that we've got here in the sheet and try to follow it. Some of it will be followed, but, you know.
Okay. So do we want to put in, because the appeals process that we have in 3.7 just talks about the ability of a working group member that believes that they're being ignored or discounted can appeal. We don't really talk about having the ability, I don't think, within the document of a working group member having the ability. My point is, I don't think we anywhere address what happens if you as a working group member feel someone's not fulfilling their responsibilities. Guys, I have to sign for a package, so I'm going to put you on speaker and you discuss that.
Okay. While Jay Scott isn't looking at the Adobe room, Sabaya, have you got more to say? Because I wanted to jump in there.
Not really. It was just that, you know, when I put out my email note regarding this, I mean,
sure.
I took the view that let's give them the option of, you know, under mitigating circumstances to have somebody else, but let's put a watch on them as well, combining the comments that were made, you know. And,
sure. I was just asking because I noticed your hand was still up, and I've been waving my hand. So with that said, Sabaya, one of the things I think I need to be fairly clear about now is my focus right now is on that 2.2 section, and whilst we've tidied up by going into 6.4.1, I've come back mentally to 2.2, and I'm talking about the role of liaison in particular and those comments, and I'm still on the do not change our language other than perhaps make it strongly. It really is, in terms of removal or complaint, it's the role of liaison to be a broker for the issues that Jay Scott just raised. In other words, if you've got members of the work group who, you know, have a complaints base and they've picked up this piece of paper, or someone is maintaining that one member is or other group is you know, there's an imbalance that needs to be redressed, a dispute. Because the role of liaison is very important in doing that, if we're talking about the ability to remove members of the work group, that's one thing. If we're talking about a removal of a liaison, a chartering organisation appointed liaison to a work group, I do not think that, well, first of all, we haven't talked about it, but I also don't think it's the business of this document or guideline. That's the business, the control of their instrument is the business of the chartering organisation or whoever put the liaison there. And because they are working or should be working under clear and specific mandate, if they're not doing their job neutrally or in a way that the rest of the work group is happy with, then that's a matter for the chairman or chairperson or the petition from the work group en masse to go to the chartering organisation, in other words, to bypass the liaison conduit, which is how it should have got to the CO in the first place if there was an issue. And then it's the CO's role to pull the choker chain around the liaison's neck and say, you are not fulfilling your role as liaison.
Why don't we do that?
And you either do this by doing what your mandate is, or then it's the CO that makes the change.
Well, why don't
but
we
I see the removal of members as one thing under extraordinary circumstance, because I think we should be re-educating and encouraging and changing the dynamic to make things work rather than hauling bits and pieces around and trying to move pieces of players on chessboards. But in terms of removal of liaison, that's absolutely back in chartering organisation territory, and you'd be real close to total collapse of the system if you're into that issue.
Well, I mean, how about we, in our appeals process, we say any member believes or just can't want to appeal the decision of the working group or the charting orders should first discuss the service with the chair. In the event the matter cannot be resolved satisfactorily, the working group member should request an opportunity to discuss the situation with the chair of the chartering organization.
Mm.
I think we can say, why don't we just put in another paragraph and say, in addition, any working group member that believes that a liaison
I mean, you'd need to have not just any working group member, Jay Scott. You'd need to have practically a vote of no confidence, either in the liaison
right.
or in the chair, for this to happen.
Right.
Well, what I'm all we need to do is put in a mechanism or a guideline that says if you think that
these controlling individuals, in inverted commas, are problematic to the process of the work group, then the work group does need a mechanism to get to the CO without having to go through what is their issues.
Right. And so I guess we could say, rather than just saying, making it, why don't we say this? Why don't we just say that, in addition, if a member of the working group believes that any of the positions set forth in section 2.2 are not functioning,
with the effectiveness and role being carried out by those individuals identified in 2.2, in other words, co-chairs, vice-chairs, secretary, liaison, that whole bunch of people, that mechanism goes
directly
somehow
to the chair of the charting organization.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? What we're saying is then, if anybody is not performing the roles in accordance with the, as set out in 2.2, you know, they can go to the church. That's what I would say. It's just put in a second paragraph that talks to those roles set forth in 2.2. So we've got the first paragraph talks about, well, if we believe we're being ignored, here's the process. Second process is if somebody's not performing their role in the manner
outlined
in section 2, they can go to the chair of the chartering organization.
Yep.
So that solves it. It makes it appealable. It gives people an outlet. It takes the liaison out of the loop.
Mm.
If it's liaison who's the problem, they're not in that loop.
Yep.
Takes the chair out of the loop. So if it's the chair that's the problem, and it goes right to the CO.
I like it.
Can I see? Who else? Was that Sabaya heard speak?
Oh, I was just simply saying that, my concern here was just the comment that people are addressing, which was particularly about the liaison. If you don't have a neutral, if you decide not to have the possibility of a non-neutral person in there, then accommodate it for it by having an appeals mechanism, and this solves that. And I guess it solves a wider issue as well, beyond just the CEO, chairman and vice chairman.
Yeah, so I just think that simply just says that there's an appeals process when one of these roles, which are sort of crucial to the smooth functioning, is not functioning correctly, you go to the CO. That's where you go. They're ultimately responsible for this process.
That's where it needs to be.
Jessica, can I just clarify? You mean the CEO or you mean the chair?
I mean the chair of the CO.
The chair of the chartering organization.
Yeah, okay. No, I was hearing CEO. I was like, okay. Chair of the CEO.
I'd say that we have consensus to address these comments concerning this by amending 3.7? That's the appeals process?
I believe so.
Yes, that's correct.
In a separate paragraph talking about this. Can I see? I see Aubrey says yes. Cheryl, yes.
Okay, I had a tick. I just took it away. It's still there.
Okay.
I'm okay, too.
Come in and Sabai, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. All right. Good. That's what we'll do. Okay, Marika?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's trudge. We got 30 minutes, and we're moving. Were there other comments we needed to address with regards to 2.2?
No, because we're ignoring all the hat shifting.
Yeah. Okay. All right. 2.1.3. Sabai, you had some comments?
Oh. Yeah, I am trying to locate them in a minute. If somebody else wants to go first.
Aubrey?
Did I have comments on which? 2.1.3?
2.3, not 2.1.3, 2.3.
I know. I've got 2.1.4.3. It talks about items for review.
Okay, we're jumping around here.
Well, I'm just going in. I'm trying to go in order that.
Yeah, I know.
That Marika.
I just have to,
going.
Yeah, just,
I don't
wait,
think
wait,
I
wait.
Responded on that one.
Okay.
We're working off.
I did, but I didn't.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Oh gosh, I'm trying to find where I.
Yeah, I've got Sabai's comments.
Oh, you have it. Okay, wonderful.
So we've gone back up. That's all, because that was before 2.2.
I just going by.
Oh, it's on the screen. It's been put on it. I mean, on the Adobe. No.
It's page 16 on Adobe.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. I was looking.
Which
I was searching for my Google email.
At the other end of that.
Page 16, okay. Okay.
Items for review. At the first meeting of the working group or as soon as thereafter is practical, the following documents should be reviewed. What did you say, Sabaya?
I have my idea. That was
well, here you go. Let's move to 2.3.
INTA made the comment that they need to have other references to sample work products and providing additional details regarding the working group charter earlier in this document. Soon thereafter, the practical owner should be reviewed in order to ensure all members have a common understanding of working mission, goals, objectives, deliverables, decision-making, charter, working group guidelines, and any other documents relative to the working group's discussion. It is required. I think it's covered in that comment. And any other documents relevant.
And this is Marika. I think we discussed in the last meeting as well that, you know, in emails that are sent out before to the group, there they already receive as well links and information to where they can find reference materials. So I don't know if the comment is relating to, because here we talk about which items are reviewed during the first meeting, and I think the intake comment is trying to say those details should already be provided beforehand, earlier in the document or maybe earlier in the process, but I think that is already covered
to
talk about reaching out to the working group and before the first meeting.
Okay, but why don't we just at the end of that first sentence, put which normally will have been circulated to the group prior to the first meeting.
No.
So it says at the first meeting we're going to go over all these things and then just put a clause at the end that says which normally are sent to them but prior to the meeting. Doesn't that answer the question? They're saying, well, it needs to be given to them before the first meeting, and we just put in something that acknowledges that reality.
So we're before the brackets. So after work groups discussion, and before EG policy development process, blah blah blah. We
put
could
it after
say
that.
Something like preferably. Well, it doesn't even have to be preferably pre-distributed.
Here's what I would have that says charter working groups guidelines and any of the discussion. Paren, for example, policy development process book issue paper.
Mm-hmm.
Which will normally be transmitted to the working group prior to the first meeting.
You can't.
Right. I found my comment. What you're proposing here is fine. I mean, to put that language in, but I thought I wasn't sure whether what Intel was asking was this in between what they were saying, which is. Do they want to know who makes the charter and when it's issued? You know, I mean, the charter itself. I mean, is that something they're asking of us?
But, again, we can't get too specific here. It just gets to the point of being so granular, it's too much. I mean, I think what we say is you're going to get as much information as we have to inform you of what you need to do. That's the charter.
As possible.
That's the mission, the goals, the objectives. What are your deliverables? What are the decisions? What are the time frames? Blah, blah, blah. If there are any issue papers, we tell you. The only thing I think the point that's well taken is they don't know that this should be received by the members prior to the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So can we just put something which are generally or normally sent to the members prior to the first meeting?
Yeah, I think that language would help. There is also the occasion, Cheryl here for the record, there is also the occasion where a work group will be, you know, formed, members will be called for, people will be busy in the process of joining and doing their declarations of interest. First meeting happens and there's not a formalised, approved, voted on, sanctioned and passed down from on high charter yet. It may be a situation where there are occasions where the chartering organisation will say to its newly born work group with its incredible group of talent and individuals, okay, guys, one of the other things you need to do at your first set of meetings is get back to us with a sample set of words for charter for our consideration. I wondered if that might be the question they were asking. And if it is, I'm not sure that's the place to answer it, certainly not in items for review at the first meeting, unless you're putting in anything else that the chartering organisation wants you to do as an item for review at the first meeting.
Yeah, but see, that seems to me that would fall into the working group's mission, goals,
yep.
Objective, deliverable.
Exactly.
Because if what the deliverable or objective is to assist us in finalising the charter... You would be told that.
But that's what I'm saying. Just say anything, and you know, in items for review, to add anything that the chartering organisation asked the work group to do at its first meeting, which may be, you know, drafting of a part of a charter. But that's fine, because the CO said, we want you to do this.
I think that falls in deliverables.
Yep, happy.
So I just think we just need to acknowledge the reality.
It doesn't fall in. I think we ignore INTA's comments. We've covered it.
And I think we just the thing, that phrase afterwards that says, which are generally or normally sent to the, which will normally
be distributed
working group prior to the first meeting, period.
Yep, that's fine.
Marika?
Yeah.
Oh, Avery, ever the pedant. Okay, not ignore it, but indicate it was covered earlier. Yes, dear.
This is Subhaya. Just for my own clarity, the initiation of a working group, right, is by the chartering organization. The chartering organization mainly is going to be the GNSO. And so the first gleam of an idea of hey, let's have a working group on this or something, that is going to occur in the eye of some GNSO council member. And then the GNSO would work together, in the most cases, to come up with the charter and then put the charter out there and say, go get a chairman, go put together a working group together. Is that correct? That's the order of events.
Subhaya, the good example is this joint, this cross-constituency ACSO1 where the GNSO will be the chartering, formally be the chartering organisation to look at mechanisms to explore what ways applicants for new GTLDs who are not in a financially solid enough situation to pay up the requirements. That working group, now that came down on high from a board resolution 20 in Nairobi. GNSO and ALAC, you know, hell, we need to do something about that. And then you sort of, you know, create the work group. It's not always just a gleam in a chartering organisation councillor's eye. It can be tossed over the fence and the GNSO and or other ACRSO has caught it. Then they've got to deal with it.
And
these guidelines give you tools to do that.
Yeah. My understanding of potentially what India is asking, I'm not saying we answer it, okay? I'm not at all saying that we answer it. I'm just saying that I think what they may be caught up is in how do I know that this is going to get started, this chartering organization who drafted, I mean, you know, that process, that I may only know about it when a working group call's gone out, you know what I mean? I mean, it may have nothing to do with us here, but I think that's, you know, for whatever reasons, I think that's the thrust of the question personally. But it's okay. It's not something that
yeah.
I can answer.
So my care factor on answering the thrust of every nuance on every question of every comment is really low right now.
Yeah, I think what we should do is just put in that document, acknowledge that the way, you know, that in response to the comment, that generally this is information that's sent out by the members of the working group once they've been identified, and we acknowledge that in the language. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Again, Cheryl, we're kind of, because I've chosen to do this.
No, I'll follow you. Just lead. Come on, I'll catch up. It's all right.
Because she sent out her emails last week in the order that I received them, which we're now back at 2.2 again, I think. This is, again, talking about elections. It was suggested by Michael Connor that we replace some language that requires candidates to describe certain things. I think the registries also gave some minimal criteria for the skills. And GoDaddy wanted 2.2 and 2.3 to sort of go into more detail. Now, Aubrey, I know with regards to the statement of qualifications, had a pretty serious position that I saw in writing this morning. Aubrey, do you want to cover that?
Yeah. And I mean, in the end of the day, we could put in any assorted bunch of requirements that we absolutely have to. But I really think that there's value in letting the candidate decide what it is they think is important in this particular situation, in this particular group to say, and it's up to the working group to say, yep, that's adequate. We know enough, or to ask questions, so on. It strikes me as going too far into the picky, you know, because then I'll start asking, well, have you chaired before? Well, last time you chaired, were you successful? What did you learn from your failure as a chair
yeah.
last time?
Yeah, well, I've never failed as a chair. How do we measure that? That type of stuff, it's too granular. It's not open enough.
I think that, you know, you scare people away with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that if the people that are voting should have the responsibility to determine whether the information they've received is sufficient for them to decide if this is a person that should lead.
Okay, Scott, that's a so much nicer way of putting it than I put it.
Yes, and I do totally agree with Jay Scott, Ms. Jordan.
And at some point, you know, you say, provide a statement of qualification. Okay, they do. And what they say is, I breathe. Well, you need to decide if that's enough. If it's not enough, you need to vote against them or ask them for information.
That's how you do it. Exactly right.
So I say that we believe that, you know, our response back to on this comment would we believe that, you know, a statement of qualifications clearly sets forth. Qualifications will vary depending on the working groups, and it is for the working group to determine, based upon what they receive, whether that has been met. And so we leave the language as it is.
This is Subaya here. I'm going to try to suggest something here. My position on this is very different from everyone's here, I think, pretty much. But I'm not speaking for that because that's what we've discussed that.
You're going back to your members of the work group position as well.
No. Yeah, I know, I understand. No, but look, there are different ways to run the world, okay? And none of them is perfect, okay? And, you know, I can say that from my point of view, the way that has been run so far with, in my own experience, has led to negative outcomes in the past, as far as I can. And so I'm saying maybe we should change it, okay? That's the only thing, okay? But that doesn't matter. You know, I'm not revisiting that issue. But I think that given the comment that was made, I think this might be a thing to do because one could at least direct it in this way, which is to say, I'm following the lead from one of the comments there, which is to say the you know, we've agreed that there should be a statement. I mean, we could even say, why have a statement? No statement. That's fine. That's even more democratic. Just put up your hand and be done with it, right? Why have a statement, right? So that's another way of looking at it, which is that we've just decided that this is a fair way. Okay. So I would say that since we are going to have a statement, maybe we should just say, you know, feel free to say what you want about yourself. I'm not saying that's the language we use, but the idea is that feel free to say whatever you want to say yourself, but you might want to address, you know, the points in this guideline document. You know, the things you might want to use in a statement about yourself may be, you know, in reference to things in this document, and leave it as that. That will be a guide. That will tell you what the roles and responsibilities are, what is expected of you, everything, and you make up your mind. You know, nobody's telling you what to do, but at least you've been told that's a good place to look at. Fair enough. Hello.
Yeah, that's the self-determined material in a declaration of interest.
I mean, we could do statements of qualifications from candidates that set forth the qualities and experience they believe
is of interest or use to the group.
Yeah. So you sort of loosely inform what it should say.
Yeah. How extensive a stamp collection you have may not be relevant.
Right. Statements of qualifications from candidates set forth the qualities and experience they possess that would serve the particular working group. I'm not on the Adobe, so I can't see if everybody's throwing tomatoes at me.
Nobody's throwing tomatoes at you. It's resounding silence, excepting Sabaya's got a leftover tick from an earlier part, unless he's re-agreeing with you.
Does that work for everybody? It doesn't go down to the granular detail, but it does give, you know...
It encourages by saying, you know, do feel free to share information you feel is relevant to the operation of the work group.
Right.
Yeah, sounds really good.
Sure thing.
Okay, let's, Marika, let's do that then.
Excuse me. Excuse me, sorry.
Okay. Now we've got the thing about 2.1.4.2, and again, we're moving up again, but this thus a chair has already been named by the charting organization. Normally, a chair will be selected first meeting. Until that time, the charting organization will fulfill the role of interim chair. Working group can elect to have co-chairs, vice chairs, or request I can staff to perform the role of chair. I think the biggest that I have, and I don't know the answer to this, is can staff perform the role of chair? I didn't think about whether that was a violation of the bylaws.
I don't know if they can be chair. Certainly there have been occasions where there has been no chair and staff has quite aptly and well filled the role of coordinating group in the absence of leadership, but we supposedly have a liaison to function as interim chair until such time as there is a chair. So I'm not really sure there's a void. But yes, of course, I think any time.
Well, why don't we do this? I think this is the problem is when you don't have anybody that wants to. Why don't we just change language? A working group can elect to have co-chairs, vice chairs, or request the CO to appoint a chair.
Interim chair.
Well, no, I said to appoint a chair. Let's say nobody wants to be chair.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. Right. Sorry. Yeah.
You go back to the charting organization. Problem. We don't have a chair. Can you find us a chair?
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. This
nobody wants to do it. So rather than just pull staff out of it, throw it back to the CO.
Yeah, this is Jonne. I like that. I think that's a good idea. But I don't have a wording in my mind, but maybe couple of words put there also that make that in the case that there is no chair in the working group.
Yeah.
The CEO kind of pointed that doesn't become kind of like the standard practice then.
It becomes an exceptional rule.
Yeah, so we could have the sentence, a chair can elect to have co-chairs or vice chairs, period. In the event there is no interest in chairing the working group, the working group, and request that the chartering organization appoint a chair.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Avery.
Yeah, and if we want to put in something about, emergency situations, in those circumstances where there is no elected or appointed leadership, staff can be asked to coordinate the activity of a group until such time, et cetera.
Okay, why don't we just say, under extraordinary circumstances,
staff may be asked to coordinate.
To perform administration and coordination function to facilitate a work group meeting.
Administrative coordination until such time as a chair can be elected or appointed.
Yep. It's just allowing the work group to start.
Liz and others, are you okay with that?
I'm fine with it, but I don't vote, so.
Right, no, but
I'm fine with it.
For sticking a role on staff, I also wondered.
Marika, is that something the...
Liz and Marika, I think that's fine. Can you just repeat what you were saying? Maybe ask to perform an administrative coordinative role?
Administrative coordination of the working group until such time as a chair can be elected or appointed, something like that.
Okay.
And it would be, you need to put in extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, I had that.
Okay. So, guys, we're done with two.
Hang on. I thought there was another point, by the way.
Oh,
I thought there was a point regarding about appealing the chair if the chair is rejected by the CO.
Correct. Let me see here.
Yeah. And I think I had thought that perhaps an appeal process should be in place, and I think Avery also suggested that. That is that if a chair has been selected by the group and then it goes up to the CEO, the CEO has to sign off on it, and for some reason they reject it, the commenter had asked, what criteria would they use or whatever, and then would there be an appeal mechanism?
Yeah, but I mean, who do you appeal to if the CEO's rejected? Do you go to the ombudsman? You'll never get a decision.
Can I get my hand up?
Yeah.
I think that, there should be a process perhaps that sort of, if they say no, they're going to give you a reason. There should be an expectation that they'll give you a reason. And you should be able to go back to the group that rejected. And I don't think there has to be further appeal because it is the chartering organization. And if you can't come to an agreement on something that little, then you've got a much...
Your work group's not going to work.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we put in, I'm just thinking aloud here, why don't we think about a thing that says, in the unlikely event, a chair is...
A selected chair is rejected by the CO.
Yeah. So that means unlikely event implies that we think it would be rare. It must articulate its reasoning for such rejection to the working group. And that the members of the working group have the ability to request reconsideration.
Good work.
Yep.
Of this. And just leave it at that.
Okay. There are two other points that were raised in connection with this. One was what happens if the appeal fails? I mean, one option is what was just suggested, just forget about it. Now, I had some thoughts on it, but I think the reason I'm bringing this up is I believe the whole idea of the working group effort here that we're trying to do is to make this a grassroots effort, right? I mean, the decisions get made down at the bottom by people and then pushed up to the top rather than the other way around. And I think that's the intent of all this. But so if we have the unlikely circumstance where the group working group selects a chair and appeal process goes through and the CEO decides no, what do we do in that event? I've been through ICANN for 12 years now, or whatever it is, and we've seen all kinds of, you know, craziness, okay, of events that you wouldn't think would happen, a rare thing. So is it possible that in such a situation the working group could just say, look, you know, as a group, because they've asked for this chair and it doesn't work out, the CEO says no and throws everything back down, the working group, what does it do at that point? Obviously, it could just go forward. Or the working group could say, you know, in a situation like that, you know, we don't want to do this anymore. Basically, this is not working out. It's a little thing we couldn't agree on. So a means towards maybe dissolving the working group and starting again afresh? I don't know. I mean, not in the context of just the chair being pushed down. It was just a thought that I had was triggered. Okay? And because that would be a message that would say the group itself can't agree to this at this point, right? And I don't know. That's just a thought. Then the second point that the person brought up was what criteria would they have used? There's the issue of just a reason. Now, I think, you know, a reason is a reason. But in terms of if you wanted to give some criteria, I think some criteria for rejecting is halfway through or something, that the working group majority has lost faith in the chair, or if there's a criminal activity. There must be some ICANN bylaw where there's some criminal activity so you can be removed. I don't know. If the minimal list was required of reasons or criteria. We can't supply everything, obviously, but suggestions could be one or two things. But anyway, that's all I wanted to point out.
Group?
This is Aubrey. All I wanted to say is all of those things strike me as extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
I thought we handled extraordinary circumstances.
There's an appeal.
With you know, and what happens to the group in the meantime is it goes into administrative coordination while peace breaks up.
What I think we should do is, with regard to the questions about what happens and all that kind of stuff, we're going to have to handle that down in six when we talk about the spring organization.
Absolutely. In appeals, yep.
That's where we tell the chartering organization, because what we need to do is we need to say, in that section, a strong preference that the working group's election of a chair will be honored unless there are extraordinary circumstances or something to that effect. But that will be handled in six. Because it depends on who you're instructing. In this section, we're instructing the working group. And we're just telling them what's going on and what should happen. But when we talk about the stuff, Sabai, you talked about criterion and all that stuff, I don't think you can nail it down that specifically. But I think you can say to the charting organization that, you know, they're strongly encouraged or whatever, and we'll deal with that in six. But I think for here, we've handled extraordinary circumstances. So if they come back and it's reconsidered and we still have no resolution, staff can run it administratively. That's what we've said.
I'm
and you have to remember, it's not the working group that gets to decide whether the working group goes forward or not. It's
I understand, yeah.
Organization. Yeah. Now, if the working group is zero, as I understand from early discussions with Yonan, in most organizations that use this model, that usually means there doesn't need to be a working group. Because you can't get anybody interested enough to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cheryl, do I see your hand up?
Yeah, you took some of the words out of my mouth. I was putting my hand down. It belongs in six, or the resolution and the discussion and the advice to the CEO belongs in six, because this is a chartering organization issue.
Okay. So let's say that we've finished two. With regards to the two comments to talk about those.
What happens if,
You just note, Marika, that we will handle those in the section dealing with chartering organizations. And with that, I'm going to bring down the gavel. We're going to move to Section 3 next time. In accordance with The problem I have is next week I am in Monterey with 200 other Yahoo legals at a offsite, so I will be unavailable on Wednesday. So I would like to ask that, since we have a larger section to do, if it would be possible if we do our call the following week, which I believe is the 12th.
Oh, yes, please.
And that we take the time to look at all the comments for Section 3, and would it be possible that we do a 90-minute call, if we need it, on the 12th?
I won't be there on the 12th, but I'll send comments ahead.
If you'll send comments ahead, Marika
right.
always makes sure that we do not ignore you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I have an IGF meeting that week, so I'll be as...
I hear Marika coming through. Yes, ma'am?
Yeah, Jay Scott, I just wanted to propose that I do the same thing as we did for this section, that I send it out in separate email threads
so
people have a chance
that
to
well,
follow and the
it
on the mailing list.
Yeah,
and,
that was great. And
okay,
I support the meeting because I'm away next week as well.
I'm away.
Yeah, I'm away next week as well, so I'm all for this change.
Okay. On the 12th. I may not be there for part of the time on the 12th, but I'll send emails ahead.
Okay.
But if we're running up to 90 minutes, that means we can do a small loop back if we need to.
Absolutely. Okay, so next call, the 12th. 90 minutes. Just hide.
Okay.
I'm not saying we'll go 90 minutes, but I'm saying I just don't want you to have any other conflicts if you can avoid it during that time, and that's when we'll meet. 12th, same bat time, same bat place.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jay Scott. I really appreciate that. That's excellent. Marika, can you make sure Gisela knows that? Because that's the only thing
yes.
about slotting that time out so we don't put other work groups in there.
Yes, of course. I will.
Thanks. Thanks, Marika.
Paul, very much for your work, for your doing your homework and paying, pushing this forward. I appreciate Marika. I wish I was on your balcony as well, but I'm glad you should have a nice weekend. Everyone have a nice weekend, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.